Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, new paradigms for a new world, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. It's a pleasure to come your way every Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com. That's richarddugan.com. And the programs are also archived. So when this program is over, you'll be able to go to the website, richarddugan.com, go to the radio show's link, and at the top of the page, you will see this interview available for your listening pleasure and information and edification, as well as the link to the website. And the website that we'll be sending you to will be that of Barbara Marks Hubbard, and she is in studio with us for the third time in as many years as we've been doing this program, and it's such a pleasure to have you back here in studio. It's been nice that we've been able to have you in studio and not on the phone. It's just, it's so much nicer. And thank you for joining us.
I really like to be in person. I'm on the phone so much that I realized I'm non-local, but it's really great to be talking directly to a person.
Well, I think that for those who are not aware, you are internationally known. You are a visionary and a futurist. And I remember that term because I took a futurist class in college. It was rather unusual. It was one of those elective courses, but it was so intriguing. Back then, they were talking about talking about Arco Santi and Paolo Solari and people of that ilk who were designing new civilizations, new ways of living, both philosophically as well as structurally, and literally new physical surroundings, if you will. And that was so fascinating to me, and it continued to spur me on. And, of course, now here we are doing this program. I want to start out, for those who are not aware of who you are and what you're about, other than saying you're a visionary, you're a futurist, a humanitarian would sort of diminish that a little bit, because it's not just about humanity. It's about the whole package and sustaining all life.
It's so interesting that your show is called Tell Me Your Story, because I really started out with the question, what is our story? This was way back in the mid-60s. What is the story of humanity that could lead to a positive future? And I was a student of Buckminster Fuller and Teilhard de Chardin and Abraham Maslow and Marshall McLuhan and the Apollo program, where mm-hmm. we saw Earth from space.
Yeah.
And I was a founder of the World Future Society in Washington, D.C. And at that time, futurism was really not a big field. And I was one of the early people. And what basically it is recognizing that you're affecting the future by everything you do.
Mm-hmm.
So a futurist is trying to see ahead and then to do that which could create a more positive future. So I became a futurist in the 60s. And then I would say, when I asked what's our story, what are positive images of the future equal to our social, scientific, and technological power?
Mm-hmm.
We could see the destructive images.
Yeah.
We could destroy our environment. We could have a nuclear holocaust.
Yeah.
But what could we see that could guide us forward? And I was amazed. This was in the 60s and 70s. There are no positive images of the future equal to our new power.
You know, and that's interesting, because the closest one that I could think of as a kid growing up in the 60s was the cartoon The Jetsons. That was as close to any kind of a positive view of our future that I can think of. But now we're talking, this is a cartoon for kids.
It's for kids, and it doesn't tell you the whole story.
No.
Now, here's the best way to discover what might be coming.
Mm-hmm.
Is you have to look to the past, but not just recent history. If you look back to the beginning of the universe, and you realize it's 13.7 billion years of evolution, whether you think God did it, nature did it, nothing did it, it did it.
Mm-hmm.
And it has arisen from nothing at all, through subatomic particles, through energy, matter, life, animal life, human life. And every one of those turns on the spiral was a crisis. Mm-hmm. And out of that crisis of evolution, new forms of life, like from pre-life to life, or from animal life to human life. What I saw is that from human life in the crisis where we have the power to destroy ourselves, was coming a new humanity
mm-hmm.
that you might call more empathetic, more co-creative, wanting to deal with the positive. Mm-hmm. And so I began to create the foundation for conscious evolution. That's the evolution of evolution from unconscious
to conscious
choice. Because if we just let it happen right now, we're going to overgrow our womb of Earth and destroy ourselves. Yeah. If we become conscious of what's creative, innovative, empathetic, we will see already there are innovations in every field. Mm-hmm. And we begin to connect the innovations. And in 1984, I ran to be selected as the vice president on the Democratic ticket.
Wow.
And I proposed a peace room to be as sophisticated as a war room.
Yes.
War rooms track enemy and how to kill them. Peace rooms track innovation, successes, breakthroughs, how to connect them and communicate them.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, 200 delegates signed a petition to place my name in nomination to find out what's working in America.
Yeah.
Now, that was 1984. Here we are, 2010. We are just more and more aware of the crisis, mm-hmm. but we're still not aware of the potentialities of the future. Because in general, the mass media doesn't pick them up. Mm-mm. The universities don't teach them. The organized religions don't know them because they're dealing in another dimension. And global corporations certainly are not concerned with that.
Right.
So our structures of society right now are really in the old model of top-down, power-oriented structures. That's not bad people, but structures that don't work.
Right.
So what we have rising up is new media, like what you're doing, is new healthcare possibilities, new educational systems, new energies. And I started to piece together the picture of what's emerging. And I realized that when we see, even now, that there's innovations growing up out of every breakdown, mm-hmm. comes breakthrough. Mm-hmm. And then you look back, you see 13.7 billion years of breakdown, breakthrough. Then you realize, oh, this is a tendency in nature.
Well, I have a question for you. I don't mean to interrupt you there, but we're going to take a quick break. And I have a question I want to put to you that came to me during an interview that the interview didn't apply to the question that came to mind. But as I've often told our listeners, I don't have a prepared set of questions. I just let the universe guide, and it wouldn't let go of the question. So I had to ask it, and I will ask you that very question when we get back. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned.
You can't go on falling back, a flooding river. Keeping all that fear inside. I understand how trouble haunts.
For a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we are here talking with Barbara Marx Hubbard, and she has a movie that is out. It is called Visions of a Universal Humanity. Visions of a Universal Humanity. And Barbara, where is this video available?
Well, you go to barbaramarxhubbard.com, and you just click on Visions, and you will be able to find it.
It's a fascinating movie. You've got to see it. And I encourage you to go to barbaramarxhubbard.com. And you can also, we're linked to your website as well.
Correct.
So you can click on that link and off
and
they go.
And it's on Amazon as well.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. get a copy of it, download it, whatever it takes, and watch this. In the middle of an interview that I was doing several months ago, as of this interview, this nagging question wouldn't go away, and it was like I didn't want to ask it because it really didn't seem to apply, but it wouldn't go away, so I'm obligated. And it was the question was spurred by some things that I had heard on, in particular, the BBC World News and other news agencies about what was going on specifically in the Middle East and some comments made on some released tapes by people who were not real happy with the way things were and they wanted them to change without naming groups. And the question was, what is humanity's purpose? Now, I have to define the question a little bit more because that question has been asked down through history. But mine is a little bit more practical. Now, you referred to the 1960s when you were searching for that positive view of the future when all we saw was the negative. My question has to do with the more positive, constructive purpose of humanity. And the last time that I personally am aware of that any segment, large segment of humanity was ever focused on a positive, constructive goal was in the 1960s with the space program. And it wasn't just the United States. After a while, the rest of the world began to jump on board and say, oh, this is fantastic. And everybody was watching when man first set foot on the moon. Man, not an American, man.
Right.
And so that's where that question comes from. Where do we want to be as humans in 50, 100, 1,000? Do we even want to be here in 1,000 years? Not will we, do we want to? And this goes to your whole aspect of conscious evolution.
Oh, what a great question. That's wonderful. Well, I got it in the 60s with the Apollo space program. Because what happened to me is I went up with those astronauts. Mm-hmm. And then I looked back on Earth as an astronaut would. And not only did I see the geographical, beautiful planet Earth, but I could see that it's a living system. There are people in it. You couldn't see that from space.
Right.
There are connections. There are internet connections. There are television. There are systems. And I saw it as a living organism. And I actually was able to see our story is our crisis is the birth of a co-creative universal humanity, first to restore this earth and free ourselves from the terrible deficiencies, and then to start moving toward more cooperative systems, start exploring the solar system such that we can have a foothold there, like the next stage of the space program. There's a lot of controversy. Should it be the new space movement, which is entrepreneurs, or should it be NASA or a combination? Mm-hmm. I was a student of the space leaders in the 60s. And what I learned is that basically we're an Earth space species already. Mm-hmm. This is like the fish coming out of the sea onto the dry land. When that happened billions of years ago, there was no biosphere. You would have had to land in a spacesuit on planet Earth because there was no living oxygen. There was no greenery. There was no biosphere. Mm-hmm. Right now, the extraterrestrial sphere, you have to carry your biosphere with you.
Mm-hmm.
You go up in your spacesuit
right.
and your spacecraft. Eventually, they will build little living systems up there. And eventually, we'll see that we are already an Earth space species. And I would think within the next 100 years, if we make it through this crisis of birth on this Earth, that we'll find that our creativity is growing so fast, it will be connected by creativity. I think we will have moved into alternative currencies en masse. So the current monetary system, which is preventing people from being funded to get this or that project done, we will create a lot of alternative wealth through creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And there will still be some degree of monetization, but not this bind that we're in.
Yeah,
I think it's very likely that we'll get zero-point energy. Now, I am told this is very controversial. Some scientists say it's not possible, but many are saying we have prototype devices. Zero-point energy is actually what they call the plenum, or the quantum field out of which everything is arising. Instead of it being empty, it's actually what they say is filled with almost infinite energy. It's also the field out of which consciousness is arising.
Mm-hmm.
There are those who tell me that they can develop devices, they call it above unity, which means that there's free energy. Now, if you can imagine—
That's got to scare the corporate structures.
A culture on this earth where we are moving into many alternative forms of currency basically to co-create, and we are moving from dependency on fossil fuels, that has to go.
Mm-hmm.
And the clean energies that we're having will be interim. They're not enough, really, just purely solar energy or wind energy. It's essential, but not enough. I believe we'll hit zero-point energy and energy from space. I think we'll find that the solar power satellites work. I think we'll find that we're establishing habitats in space. I think we'll find there's absolutely no resource shortage whatsoever for a species who's becoming an Earth space universal species. That means our consciousness is going to expand just like yours and mine is right now, mm-hmm. because we're already feeling connected. Mm-hmm. This has a heart connection too. It's not just about technologies. You start to feel connected through empathy with people mm-hmm. who are hungry, with people who are in earthquakes, with people who are being flooded. And through that empathy, the species is learning to love one another.
Yeah.
This is a huge breakthrough. So if we can love one another, if we develop heart coherence instead of competition everywhere, and we move into free energy systems, clean energy systems, and we're an Earth-based species, then you start thinking of our health and how tremendous advances in mind-body health. And when you kick on biotech and nanotechnology, there are those who say we will have an indefinite lifespan.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a choice. We could be, I think, mm-hmm. just in the kind of poetic terms, Mother Earth is giving birth mm-hmm. to a co-evolving universal species capable of restoring the mother, freeing the people, exploring the universe.
We often, as our subject matter, talk about transitioning, death and dying, and that though on this side of the veil, as we'll use that term, one is dying, on the other side of the veil, they are being, in essence, born. Maybe not into what we would understand as an infant body. We don't know because we haven't been there to come back and tell everybody. But that's the general philosophical understanding, if you will.
I think that's right. There's a NASA scientist, I think his last name is Dick, who says the biocarbon-based phase of evolution is a quick phase. Mm-hmm. That is to say, bodies like ours.
Right.
Because once there were no bodies, and then you got multicells and animals and humans, I don't know if this is true, but the thought here is that as we move into the solar system and then beyond that into the galaxy, you won't go up as a carbon-based animal mm-hmm. creature human.
Right.
What are you going to go up as? I just think in my deepest intuitive understanding, we are ever and ever more light bodies. Now, that's a big jump. But
right.
I think that we're going to be of a universal intelligence, creating bodies sensitive to thought. Let's put it that way.
But basically, we will be made up of energy.
And we already are.
Right. But in terms of shedding the carbon-based body, mm-hmm. and not so much in exchange for, because it's the lighter energy body that resides inside the vehicle.
It's already here.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you have to add to the fact that there are trillions of other planetary systems out there.
Yeah.
Some of them may well be wombs for life, like Earth is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that's so, they have to go through their phase of developing life, of developing technologies, and then they come through the crisis of birth. It's a very dangerous period, because if you have the power to break through your own Earth atmosphere into the solar system and beyond, you have the technology to destroy yourself.
Yeah.
It's the most dangerous period, I think, of any life form that gets to this stage. So we're in a crisis that's very real. We could misuse these powers and self-destruct. However, if you have a positive vision of where we might go, mm-hmm. and we start building that vision together, mm-hmm. I'm just creating a space in which to build it, called a universal humanity.
Yeah. You're not telling us what it will look like. You're saying, here's the space. Make it look like whatever you want.
Fill it up, and I know it would have to do with our spiritual, social, mm-hmm. scientific, technological capacities matured.
Right.
We have never seen ourselves matured as a co-evolving species.
Mm.
The mm-hmm. science fiction doesn't know. They basically make us still a warring tribe.
Yes.
And they carry us up into space warring.
Yeah.
I don't know that we'll get that far if we stay warring.
I love Gene Roddenberry's stories, in the various levels of Star Trek and so forth, that we still have that in us, but we're trying to not do that as much. You know, we're saying, okay, yes, that was a part of us back then, and yeah, we still struggle with it, but it's not as strong as it used to be. We're trying to understand, we're trying to explore, not to exploit.
That's right, and I want to go back to my concept of a peace room, mm-hmm. as sophisticated
yes,
as a war room.
I like that, I really do.
Now, by peace, I'm thinking of peace through co-creation, mm-hmm. peace through innovation, peace through compassion connecting. Mm-hmm. And I believe that when that exists on internet, mm-hmm. we're calling it a synergy engine to help synergize what's emergent and creative and to invite everybody to put their dreams and their visions in there, mm-hmm. to connect with others and to become co-creators. I think that that's the alternative to war.
Yeah.
And that is the essence of conscious evolution, is connecting what's emergent and creative and loving. Mm-hmm. We know it's everywhere, but it's visibly nowhere.
Yeah.
My life is about making it more visible.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we want to do. We want to bring it to the forefront so that people can take a look at it, so to speak, right. euphemistically speaking, and try to understand it as well and say, look, you can have a part of this. And isn't it also true that if we share in the creation of something, all right, we co-create, we build something together, don't we both then have a vested interest in its survival, in its maintenance, etc., whereas someone who's standing off to the side watching us do this, they really don't have the same vested interest that we do. So we want to draw them in to be a part of this.
Well, this is exactly right. I would say the immediate terms of the emerging vision is a co-creative society. Mm-hmm. That would be a society in which each person is encouraged to express their own creativity in such a way that it's for the good of themselves, because mm-hmm. you start to grow when you express your creativity.
Right.
In connection with others for a larger good. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of creativity around weapons building. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of creativity about fighting.
Mm-hmm. Strategizing.
I mean, huge amount of intelligence has gone into war. Mm-hmm. However, because war and environmental collapse are so dangerous now, the intelligence, even in the military, is shifting to peace building because they can't win by massive bombing or killing anybody.
Yeah.
You know, we're a hyper-military power fighting terrorists.
Yeah.
Who you can hardly find, and when you do, they're in rags with hardly any shoes on.
Right.
And here we are.
Yeah.
1,500 nuclear weapons in our country, focused on 1,500 in Russia.
Yeah.
Now, they think that is reducing the danger. It's actually ridiculous. Mm-hmm. If anybody calls people like you and me impractical, I say, wait a minute. Is it practical to have that many weapons, about five of which could totally destroy the world? And you call that practical? So the people at the top of the system are caught in an absolutely impractical situation. Even an Obama, who you can see wants to be a unifier, whatever your politics are, you can see there was a man that was at least trying. He gets up into that high-level power, and he's in an oppositional system.
Yeah.
They're all designed to oppose each other. Mm.
We all have our visions of the future, each of us as individuals. How do we bring those together so that my vision of what the future is or will be is in concert with yours? It doesn't interfere with yours. Yours doesn't interfere with mine. And hopefully, in actuality, that they're complementary, that they actually mesh together. How do we work towards that?
I think we need a sacred space to share our visions into everybody, anybody. And there is a power in nature which I think of as the power to synergize or coordinate. I mean, how come you're 50 trillion cells in your body, mm-hmm. talking to 50 trillion cells? Our cells did that.
Yeah.
Over billions of years, from single cell to multi-cell, nature is a hierarchy of synergies. Nature selects for that which cooperates best. Now, sometimes we cooperate by fighting another cooperative force, like in the military.
Yeah.
But ultimately, in the militaries, because the power is so great, we're moving towards a desire to cooperate on a global scale for global warming.
Right.
You can't do it by fighting anybody.
No, you can't.
You can't handle even the financial instability by fighting somebody.
Right.
So a lot of the crises can't be won by fighting anybody. They have to be won by what you're talking about, cooperation and synergy. I'm saying in the work that we're doing and many of us doing together is out of that natural tendency to find connection of what's working. That's what evolution does.
Right.
It selects for what works. Let's have a space for people to share their visions in an evolutionary perspective. So that's not just immediate fixing of old problems. It's what's emerging in you personally. What's your life purpose that you would like to express? What do you see and where would you like to give it? What kind of partners do you need?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm a communicator.
Right.
So I do very well with partners like you, who is a communicator,
mm-hmm.
who interviews people like me. This is what I would call co-creative.
Okay.
Because you already want to do this, but you need people who want to communicate.
Right.
So you and I are an example right now of co-creation. And then if you can imagine through the internet and all these different social networks, facilitating more and more people becoming co-creative with each other,
mm-hmm.
right where they live or on internet, or on these amazing Facebooks and Twitters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think in the next 4 to 5 years, we're going to see the emergence of a co-creative culture. And my hope is it goes fast enough to avoid the decline and the collapse. So it's like a birth. When a baby's being born, it doesn't have much time to learn to breathe.
Right, right. A very short window.
We have a very short window to learn to coordinate our creativity to handle immediate emergencies like global warming and financial collapse and resource depletion and species extinction, really immediate things.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to have connecting what's emergent that may still be growing. You know, there's emergencies.
Right.
And then there are emergences.
Right.
I've been on the emergences piece of it. And then you look at the innovations, and then you look at the evolutionary technologies, the space program,
yeah.
biotechnology, nanotechnology, zero point energy, and you put that together and you see a map of a new species.
I remember somebody telling me that we have some phenomenal technology, but we as humans, even to this date, he says, we do not understand the technology that we have. What we're doing with it now, he says, is so infantile by comparison. And again, he wasn't thinking of, you know, turning it into weapons or anything, but in terms of creative, consciously creating something of a positive nature for the future, that we just don't understand what we have in our hands. Whether it's a cell phone, an iPhone, whether it doesn't matter what it is of the higher technologies that we're dealing with as consumers in particular on a day-to-day basis. We could be doing so much more with it.
Well, you used the right word. We are infantile.
Yeah.
In my language, we are a newborn universal humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And we have never had one coordinated breath yet. We haven't learned how to shift from a non-renewable to renewables. That's like from your mother's energy
to
renewable
yeah.
energies. We haven't learned to open our eyes and see that we're all part of one living system.
Yeah.
The astronauts helped us by seeing Earth from space, but the next step is seeing the living system, the noosphere it's called, the mind sphere,
mm-hmm.
the intelligence, the global intelligence, the global heart-mind intelligence. I've seen that. I hold that in my consciousness all the time when I'm talking to you. I feel that I'm a young universal human at 80 years old, who is just barely waking up to the possibility of participating in a co-creative, co-evolutionary world that is being launched into an Earth space environment that is undoubtedly filled with other life. I hold that as I'm talking to you. So the field of consciousness of an evolutionary human being enlarges. It goes back to look at the 14 billion years and say, oh my God, nature did that. It's continuing through us. You see the crisis as a birth of something new. You see yourself as participating through your creativity, and you start envisioning what it would feel like, not only be like, but feel, if we became a connected creative species. And you see that it's as great as the shift from Neanderthal to self-reflective consciousness.
Yeah. Barbara Marks Hubbard is my guest. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Barbara has a new video that is available. It's a movie called Visions of a Universal Humanity, and it's available at her website as well as Amazon.com. The website is BarbaraMarksHubbard.com. That's BarbaraMarksHubbard.com. Now, as I flip this open, I noticed that you have in here on the inside cover of the DVD, the Wheel of Co-Creation. Can you, even though we can't really go into much description specifically of the wheel itself, but can you tell us about the concept and the principle of the Wheel of Co-Creation?
If you think of a spiral of evolution, and in our turn in the spiral, put a wheel, and think of the wheel with spokes. So one spoke is health, and the next sector is education, the next sector is environment, the next sector is economics, the next sector is arts and media, and so forth. Then look within that wheel and imagine that you could scan for breakthroughs in every field already existing, and imagine that you could connect them. Right now, you would see the peace room come alive. You would see the Wheel of Co-Creation, which is the structure of the peace room, as the are turning the spiral. I believe that this conversation we're having is turning the spiral. So I would put us in the sector called media, and your show would be starlit as a starring show, because you're seeking what's emerging. And I would recommend that everybody go listen to it and to those archival programs, because just your show would start giving the whole world something to look at. So the Wheel of Co-Creation is actually a matrix for what's creative, what's working, connected towards the next stage of evolution. Now, my movie Visions of a Universal Humanity, I decided to interview some of the best visionaries I know. So I interviewed Bruce Lipton, who wrote a Biology of Belief. I interviewed Jean Houston on creativity and the feminine co-creator. I interviewed Freeman Dyson, one of the great physicists from Princeton University. Michael Dowd, who wrote Thank God for Evolution. Nassim Harriman, the physicist. And you know what? Every single one of them gives their view on how our evolutionary potential already exists.
Yeah, I would agree with Michael Dowd. I've been working for the first 15 years in the media for a Christian radio station. And, of course, the arguments were always going on and on about creation versus evolution. And my conclusion after all of that was, well, yeah, God created evolution. I mean, that's the way I looked at it.
Right. The emergent, nested creativity. And here is a good distinction. They're in the more traditional material-based scientific establishment, the view is that it basically is an accidental universe. Now, that view is fading at the very growing edge of physicists and psychologists and so forth. But the basic view there was that there is no deeper patterning leading to higher order. Believe it or not, even though you can see, it's obvious to me, the scientific establishment, like Richard Dawkins, who wrote The Selfish Gene, and Sam Harris, who wrote The End of Faith, they're actually killing an old vision of God. They're killing an orthodox fundamentalist vision of God fighting God. But the new vision of God in the evolutionary movement is that the entire universe is intelligent, that everything within the universe from the subatomic all the way on up to you and me sitting here is imbued with the universal creativity. And it's an energetic creativity. And as you mature as a human, that creativity and intelligence begins to seep into your own consciousness. So let's say you were created by that consciousness. But now we are just at the very early infantile threshold of being conscious of the consciousness creating the universe.
Yeah.
And the great mystics and avatars, like a Buddha or Jesus, they were great individuals who tapped in and created the religious cultures of the world. I think we're becoming a new norm. You and I are not mystics or saints or avatars, mm-hmm. but we are tuning in.
Right.
So,
right.
And look at us. How many millions and millions of us are out there, and how many people listening to your show are already there?
Well, we hope that many, many people are there, because the more people who, so to speak, get on the bandwagon, the faster we're going to be able to create what it is that we want of a positive nature for our future, and short and simple, have a future that we want to be a part of. Because part of my question about, you know, do we want to be here in 50, 100, 1,000 years? And I'd have to say that there are certain times in which there are those of us who say, I don't want to be here anymore. This has just gotten too nuts. You know, it's too materialistic. There's too much marketing. There's too much of this and this and this and this and this. I've had enough. I can't take this anymore. This is driving me crazy. And I've heard one thing that seems to resonate throughout all of these conversations that I've had with people about moving forward, about our future, and that is that we need to get back to nature. Mm-hmm. And I was sharing this in terms of, say, marketing, and in terms of trauma, somebody always trying to sell me something. I said, when I'm out with my chickens, I don't get that. They don't have billboards plastered across their wings. They're not asking me for to give them something in exchange for something else. I feed them because I love to have the eggs, and they're contributing to – they're giving their all, and I know that. And I love that about them. And every time I take the eggs, I pat them on the head and I say, thank you. Thank you for contributing.
See, that's so beautiful. And I'd like to speak about what I consider to be the nature of nature.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the evolutionary spiral for billions of years, the nature of nature is when it hits a crisis of its own limits, it innovates and transforms from subatomic to atomic to molecular all the way on up. The nature of nature right now is innovating and transforming. And in the environmental movement, they call it bright green or biomimicry. This is very interesting. Instead of just saying, let's go back to an earlier phase when we didn't have all this technology and population, we really can't.
Right.
So let's go forward to learn how nature itself grows. If we have to build a car, let's make it entirely recyclable.
If
there are architects building whole cities, Bill McDonough is one, that I believe they're saying this city has no waste. See, nature has no waste. A tree drops its leaves, it does this and that, and it's incorporated into the growth.
Right.
So we are learning from nature how to grow more like nature, but through human intelligence combined with nature.
Yeah.
And that, for me, is the only way forward. And that includes the space program.
Mm-hmm.
See, when they take us up into space, we have to carry the biosphere with us.
Right.
And not only in our little spacesuits, but if you were going to even think of building a small habitat in space, we would have to learn exactly how nature does it.
Yeah.
And we have to learn it on this Earth first, mm-hmm. in order even to get enough energy to keep going in space. And some of my space friends tell me that it won't be chemically based rockets. It'll be more advanced technologies. Hmm. Like you said, some of the technologies right now are still infantile. And we're infantile.
Right. Yeah.
So let's assume we get anti-gravity,
mm-hmm.
zero-point energy.
Yeah.
Literally, God only knows what. And I personally feel nature is progressively transforming towards more conscious life.
Well, all I know is that at the time of our recording of this interview, you've got me beat by 30 years. I'm fast approaching the half century mark. And of course, by the time this interview airs, I will have passed it. And yet I still feel 17. Maybe the physical body can't do the things that a 17-year-old could do, but the energy level is there. The excitement, the prospects for the future, not just my immediate future. But one of the things that you said also has to do with innovations in health. And one of the, and then another aspect was a different kind of monetized system where, it's not the haves and the have-nots, and I don't have to scramble to try to come up with enough to get this other thing with what I've scrambled to get. One of the thoughts that has occurred to me, but also has occurred to others who are these same type of visionaries who are trying to design these new civilizations, is that if you have a non-monetary based system, you almost immediately eliminate the majority of the health problems in the world, because most of them are generated because of the stresses and strains over trying to acquire.
Yes, acquire and produce,
yes,
that which you don't need.
Yeah.
I mean, think of the products that you go into a supermarket that just take cereals.
Yeah.
And there's rows upon rows of different boxes, and then they have to advertise it. And then now there's a beginning of the whole green economy.
Yeah.
Where there are people who are in business who are trying to evolve capitalism itself to a more green capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the biggest movement.
Yeah.
Social entrepreneurship, conscious, people like Hazel Henderson with her ethical marketplace, people like Rinaldo Brutico here in Santa Barbara, you should interview him,
yeah,
head of the World Business Academy. These are all businessmen who want to serve the whole. Now, Rinaldo has just moved to Santa Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think I would like to see in Santa Barbara would be a greater gathering of people with evolutionary consciousness.
Yeah.
And who can share their visions and their sense of what's emergent personally in this city and beyond.
There's a part of me that would love to do that in the terms of maybe even setting up some type of a forum and putting the question I put to you a little while ago. From your perspective, those who are listening, what's your answer to the question, what is humanity's purpose? Where do we want to be in 50, 100, or 1,000 years, and then some? And maybe have an open forum in that regard, have people contribute.
I think you should. I think it would be a wonderful, stimulating thing to do.
Well, we'll talk more about that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned.
Take to that road, see how far it goes, and on that great ocean road, all the countries in our bones, all the trouble that you know empties out as you go.
Tell me your story, new paradigms for a new world, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We're here with Barbara Marks Hubbard, and she has joined us here in studio, and I'm so glad that you have a movie that's out, and that's one of the things that we wanted to talk about, of course, is the visions of a universal humanity. It is available at your website, barbaramarkshubbard.com. It's also available through amazon.com. And as we fast approach the end of our program, I wanted to open it up for you if there was either a summary of what we've talked about, or if there was a short version, if you will, the Cliff Notes version, for those who know what Cliff Notes are, of what it is that Barbara Marks Hubbard is all about.
Thank you for asking. I've just learned.
Oh, that's good.
I've had so many pieces to the puzzle that I've been putting together, and I'm calling it right now The Sacred Way of Conscious Evolution. And I'm doing a teleseminar series, and I will do many more series, and I'll tell you very briefly what the elements of The Sacred Way are.
Mm-hmm.
First, you have to get evolutionary eyes. That means you got to look back into deep time past and see the extraordinary nature of evolution toward higher forms of life. Go into the core of the spiral and feel it inside you. Because whatever got us from subatomic particles to you and me sitting here is not stopping now. So the impulse in each person is the impulse to evolve. So that's evolutionary eyes. The second part is giving birth within yourself to that evolving universal human. Everyone has it potentially, but you almost have to cultivate it and see it and meet others who can see it in you. You know that great phrase in Avatar, I see you?
Mm-hmm.
We have to say that to each other. I can say that to you,
right,
Richard, because I really do. I see you. And that's seeing deeper than just the exact physical personality.
Right.
It's seeing into that sourcing being. Then you have to say giving birth to your life purpose, your vocation, which usually there's no school, no label, and no pay for most people's evolutionary creativity.
Yeah.
So we need to give birth to that and help each other and connect. And then what would society look like if the wheel of co-creation and the peace room were actually connected on internet instead of these old governmental systems that we had the people connecting, feeding up to government and government feeding down into the people into a more synergistic environment? I see that.
Yeah.
And then I go on to seeing the spiritual roots of this potential in the great religious traditions. And I'm creating something called the Abrahamic evolutionaries.
Oh.
These are Christians, Muslims, and Jews who have an evolutionary perspective.
Yeah.
And still are holding the deep faith of their traditions, its roots and shoots. And then we're going to have...
Interesting.
Yeah, because I would love to have a dialogue with people who are... Like, I know quite a few people who are evolving Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
I have found a wonderful evolutionary Jewish woman, Heather Mandel, who's written a book about Eve. Like, I've written my version of Eve. And Heather and I and some of my evolving Catholic friends are looking for evolving Muslim. It doesn't have to be women, but so far it is women.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to see in my view of conscious evolution that the religious traditions now, including Buddhism and Hinduism and others, that we begin to see what is our gift to the conscious evolution of humanity? What is the unique gift of Catholicism, of Buddhism, of Judaism, of Muslim, the Muslim tradition into our future?
Yeah.
And they all have a gift.
Yeah.
And so instead of dealing with the dogmas and the differences, you would deal with the potentialities. And finally, I would like to say that we can envision celebrating a planetary birth experience.
Mm.
That's in my movie visions. Minute by minute and day by day, we're getting closer and closer to either breakdown or convergence of breakthrough. I would like us to start envisioning breakthrough as convergent,
yeah,
emergent, awakening a planetary scale of conscious evolution. That's a vision. And so my teaching and my life is all about discovering that, finding people who are working in every sector of the wheel,
mm-hmm,
bringing this onto media, bringing it onto television, and working by December 21st, 22nd, 2012 for an actual planetary birth experience for us collectively.
I want to thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story with us today.
Thank you.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Please check out Barbara's materials, the movie Visions of a Universal Humanity at BarbaraMarksHubbard.com. You can also, we're also linked to her at RichardDugan.com. Until next Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific time and streaming live on the internet, love to all.